If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast. It's episode 390. This is our 2026 Masters Tournament Tips podcast. Barry O'Hanrahan and Paul Williams join me, Steve Bamford, to discuss our selections for this week's 90th Augusta National Edition. Good morning, gents.
Good morning, guys.
Morning, guys.
This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit gambleaware.org for more information. And of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world famous golf betting system website where we have my in-depth betting preview. Plus, Paul's Masters Outsiders piece. We've got a course research and trends preview. Paul has been in the stats lab pulling together this week's data. We have Augusta National Strokes Gained Analysis. I thoroughly recommend that. We've got detailed form, inbound player form and combi sheets, plus new and old predictor models for the 2026 Masters. All of our content is available completely free of charge. There is no paywall or registration required. On X, follow Barry at A Good Talk Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting. I am at Bamford Golf. We're on Blue Sky. Search for Steve Bamford and Paul Williams. Subscribe to the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel, where this podcast is available each and every week. If you are listening on YouTube or watching, there isn't a lot to watch because it's a blank screen, but press that like button. Subscribe to the channel. Now, you guys as listeners power this podcast, so we need your five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. As ever, for those of you who leave a review, I'll read them out at the start of a future show. Leave your name and where you are in the review. Bomber Harris in Toronto, thank you very much for this five-star review. You pick the cuts, I take the credit, is the title. Hi, boys. I'm an Aussie who spends about half the year in Toronto, which turns out to be a great time zone for watching the golf. I'm only a small punter, but I found the podcast a few years back when I needed help staying competitive in a tipping comp with mates I went to school with in the 80s. We tip, make the cut, and I've really enjoyed the banter while learning a lot along the way. I'm always listening for the rare moment when you all line up on someone. Is it going to happen this week? Because they usually at least make the cut. I was on Spieth as well at the Valspar. Nearly pulled out what hair I've got left watching those final holes. Keep it up. Love the banter and the fun you guys clearly have together. Makes the golf week even better. Bomber Harris, thank you very much for your five-star review. It's much appreciated.
Brilliant stuff. Thanks, Bomber. Whether they actually make the cut or not is a different matter when we're all on board, but yeah, you never know. Perhaps it'll align this week.
Sink or swim, they are fun weeks when we're all in the same kind of cycle or thought process.
Yeah.
I was going to give the majors competition star billing, Paul. So do you want to quickly take the listeners through the 2026 majors competition sponsored by Bet365, which ends first tee time on Thursday, please?
Yes, very, very good point. You do need to get your entries in before that first tee time on Thursday. So that'll be early morning over in the US and around lunchtime here in the UK. Of course, we'll know the exact tee times later today, but it generally tends to be around about noon. So the majors competition, if you've played before, exactly the same as it has been in previous years. If you haven't, there'll be an explanation and a link in the podcast description. Essentially, though, it's a one and done. We need four names. One name for the Masters, one name for the PGA Championship, one name for the US Open, one name for the Open Championship. And you send them to us either via the Facebook thread. There's a very lively thread on Facebook which has everyone's entries on there. So that's well worth a look if you're on that platform. You can send us it via X or via Blue Sky or via email if you don't do any of the above. And essentially tell us who you think is going to win those four majors as a one and done. We'll collate the dollar earnings that each of the players that you select earn at those four majors and create a leaderboard of everyone in the country or everyone in the world who enters the competition. And at the end of the Open Championship, we'll declare a winner who wins £150 or currency equivalent, £75 to the runner-up and £25 to the third place finisher. Sponsored by Bet365. Many thanks again to Bet365 for sponsoring the competition again this year. I noted, and I know Steve and I had a conversation at the back end of last week about that, that 365 have just launched a bet builder product on golf. And I believe that they're the first bookmaker out there to do it. So if you tend to use bet builders for your football, soccer accumulators or other sports, then you can now do exactly the same thing on golf, where you can combine things like top five, top 10 finishes to make the cut. That's always a popular accumulator type bet. And you can do that through the Bet Builder product now. I noticed this morning on Bet365. So you can have a stack of players who to make the cut as a big bet builder. So do take a look if you like that kind of product. We've asked Bet365 if they'd be so kind as to give us an exclusive offer for GBS readers and listeners. So if that arrives over the next day or so, then we'll post it on the website, and any of you guys who fancy playing along with that can do exactly that. So keep your eyes peeled. But yes, back to the competition. Please get your entries in by the first tee time on Thursday.
You can sign up to Bet365 via the Golf Betting System website. Mm. We've got a bet £10 and get £30 in free bets and new customer offer. Just use the bonus code SPORT30 when registering. I will put a link to that very offer in the description of this podcast. And of course, there is also a link through to the terms and conditions, the rules and how you enter the majors competition. Right, thanks for that, Paul. That's fantastic. I know we've got a very busy show, but we need to talk Valero Texan Open for a minute. Barry, who had you backed who was a feature on Sunday at the Valero Texas Open?
That was fun, wasn't it?
Who did you have in the mix, Barry?
I had Hizatsune.
As did I.
Yep.
Paul, who did you have?
Yeah,
it's even more painful for Paul.
Yeah, it's been a painful year, isn't it? So I had Bob, who was four clear at halfway. He was odds on at the mid. He's odds on midway through Friday before some of the afternoon players had even teed off. He was odds on four shots clear, playing some exceptional golf, and once again, he couldn't make it stick. That's Matsuyama and Lowry and Ludwig and now Bob this year have all been in fantastic positions and have failed to win. But so Bob didn't win. And then we had this kind of shining light.
Oh, it gets worse, listeners.
It does get worse, yeah.
It gets worse.
This shining light in Matt Wallace, who had an outstanding weekend, got himself to the lead and
he was delivered from upon high in a strobe light of he's going to save my week. Yeah, Matt Wallace
saved my bacon. Birdied 15, birdied 16, birdied 17, par 5 18. If he makes birdie on that par 5 18th, then it's playoff time. Of course he parred that. JJ Spawn eagled the 17 and wins the tournament. Yeah, I mean, Bob made it interesting briefly, didn't he, with that eagle on 17. So, again, he needed a birdie the last to take it to a playoff, but he couldn't do that either. So, yeah, Bob, Matt finished T2. Hizatsune finished, where did he finish? Tied 8th, I think, for you boys in the end.
Oh, don't. He bogeyed the last to make sure that we didn't even get a full each-way return. Mm. It was pure perfection.
And my rationale with Wallace, I mean, Bob was pickable because, you know, he was a relatively short price and quite fancied. Matt was not so. And he just struck me as that kind of person, that kind of player who would go out there and give it full beans to try and get in the Masters. And that's exactly what he did. And he played some really, really nice stuff. So I'm not too down on Wallace for that, because I think that his weekend was so strong, and I think we just need to pick him in the right week where there's the kind of mental motivation for him to go and do the same again. But he should take great heart from that, I think.
He has made the Aeon Swing 5 for the RBC Heritage the next week.
Yep.
He's in there with Lipsky, Blanchett, Jordan Smith and Johnny Kiefer. So they'll be playing the next signature level event, the RBC Heritage.
Yeah, good for him. And I hope he can bank a decent check out of that.
That's one thing I do like about the PGA Tour now. You can actually pull a couple of a decent result together, or big result. You do get a little bit of a reward.
Mm. Yeah. And as a fan, you can see that happening as well. So it wasn't just this hidden, murky way of getting into these events. It's like it's very front and forward, which I like a lot. So you've got loads of different storylines on Sunday.
Yeah. Right. Come on, lads. We need to start talking Masters here.
Well,
let's not talk the minutiae of qualification for signature event level.
I'll link it across. So one thing I didn't want on Sunday was Oberg to win. So, kind of delighted he farted around and made a bunch of bogeys and didn't win, because I just didn't think he could do two in a row, and I have a big fancy on him for this week. So,
That is absolutely spot on. Brian Harman won the Valero last year, finished 36th at Augusta. Akshay won in 24, finished 35th. Corey Connors missed cut. Spawn, when he did it in 22, finished 23rd. Jordan Spieth, 21, finished 3rd. But I'm going all the way back to Adam Scott, 2007. No one has won the warm-up the week before the Masters and gone on to take the green jacket. Of course, the one that did do it a long, long time ago, must have been 06, Phil Mickelson. Who else? So I was absolutely pleading for Oberg, because I was really interested in backing him or McIntyre not to win. So they didn't. So that's good. So this week, 2026 Masters, we have a stacked field. Lots of questions, and fairly long time now, we've got a very open betting heat. I am seeing, we're recording this Tuesday morning in the UK, I am seeing Scottie Scheffler now at 6-1, the world number one. John Rahm out at 12s. These are Bet Victor prices, which have literally just clicked in the last 10 minutes. Rory McIlroy and Bryson DeChambeau at 14-1. Xander 16-1. Ludwig 18-1. And it's then 22-1 bar the rest. Last year, if we'd have zoned into this, you'd have had Scotty and McIlroy both south of 6-1, I believe. Mm. Maybe 15-2 for McIlroy, something along those lines.
Yeah, around that.
So effectively, the books are telling us, there you go, there's five players there between 6-1 and 16-1. Who's going to win the Masters? So there's going to be various answers out there and various answers to that question from the bookmakers. Or is it going to be one of these trend-busting years where someone from deeper down the odds gets the job done? Just to put this into context for listeners, I do, and I say this every year on this Tips podcast, edition 389 i.e. the previous podcast, is our research podcast. And there is over an hour of trends, course information, some really fantastic data that you can get your teeth stuck into in terms of taking this list of, is it 91 players, Paul?
91, yep. Yep.
And, you know, paring them down to something more manageable to select from. So I do push you towards that research podcast because we just haven't got time to go into a lot of this information. But one thing I will say, here are the data golf rankings going back to Danny Willett of Winners of This. Willett was 17, Garcia was 10, Reed was 20, Woods was 13. So if you're looking for players, you know, further down that betting list, these are the kind of data golf rankings you need to be looking at. Then it starts to shorten. So DJ in 2020 was number 3 in the data golf rankings. Matsuyama in 2021 was 29. He was the deepest. So no one outside the top 29 on data golf has won this going back to 2016. We then have Scheffler at 3, Rahm at 2, Scheffler at 1, McIlroy at 2. So 5 of the last 6 winners of this have been in the data golf top 3. So there's a sign. That also comes through in price. 13-2 McIlroy, 4-1 Scheffler, he was the favourite, 9-1 Rahm, 16-1 Scheffler, 45-1 Matsuyama, 9-1 Dustin Johnson. So no one bigger than 16-1 going back to Tiger Woods. Sorry, Matsuyama was 45-1, but of the favourites, no one has been bigger than 16-1, which is kind of corresponding to what we went through a little bit earlier in terms of price. Mm. Wood 16s, DJ 9-1. Another trend I just thought I'd quickly run through, Masters appearances prior to winning. Debutants don't win this. Fuzzy Zeller and all that. See, I remembered this week, Paul. Spieth 1 attempt, Willett 1 attempt, Garcia 18 appearances, Reed 4, Woods 20, DJ 7, Matsuyama 9, Scheffler 2, Rahm 7, Scheffler 4, McIlroy 16. There are some debutants this year that I think have very good chances of being somewhere on that first page of the leaderboard. Chris Gotter up, Jacob Bridgman, Marco Penge. There's 3 names for you. Now, I haven't tipped them up, but when you just look at analysis, if you're looking for a live outsider, someone that can get into the mix at a bigger price, I think those 3 could get, or one of those 3 could get involved. Now, course, it's long. It's huge, really. It effectively plays at 7,900 yards as a par 72. On the scorecard, it's 7,565 yards. They get that extra distance by effectively mowing the grass the wrong way against the hole to get the ball to stop as, you know, quickly as soon as it hits the surface. There's no rough here. It's all about the first cut. That's 1.375 inches. And outside of that, you've got tree trouble. And you're also into the pine straw. You're going to hear the term pine straw a lot this week. Always conjures for me Mickelson on 13.
Yep.
When he was picking around the ball and pulled off that master second shot into the par 5 on 13. That's the beauty of Augusta. You've got so many memories, and clearly Rory added tons of those last year, 15 especially. Now, I've been looking at the weather, chaps. Wasn't a lot of rain in the build-up. I watched some of the ladies' amateur, girls' amateur, over the weekend, and the course of the conditions looked absolutely prime. They looked lovely. I don't think there's been any rain since. If there was, there was a tiny 0.05 of an inch smattering on Saturday night. And I'm looking at the forecast right now over the next week. There is, well, it looks to me, unless I'm going blind, there's pretty much 0% chance of rain. across tournament week. I'm also looking at the wind forecast. Now, Thursday, first round leader bets. I don't know. I would hold off, personally, just looking at this, because it could be a situation where the earlies have got gusts up to 25 miles an hour. And we see this a lot of Augusta. The later tee times get a calmer afternoon session.
Yeah. Often happens.
Happens a hell of a lot, doesn't it?
Mm.
Now, Paul, you'll be doing our first round leader selections tomorrow. So
yeah.
I'm sure you'll be all over the weather forecast and those later groups.
Yeah, well, we should get the tee times later today, but the I'll take a final view on Wednesday morning, early Wednesday, and I'll have my preview out, kind of, I don't know, 8, 9 o'clock, something like that, on Wednesday morning, hopefully. So pop back to the site and see. But yeah, as Steve said, there's often this window at the back end of the first day where the wind just lays down a little bit, and the last groups, kind of last 2, 3, 4 groups, have produced so many of the first round leader winners over the recent past. It's got to be a factor in your calculations, I think. Particularly if the weather forecast, as Steve's described, kind of enhances that this year. So, interesting market.
I'll be praying for at least one of my very short guys to be a PM afternoon starter, just looking at that. I'm not saying it's going to be absolutely pivotal. The thing is that when you come to Friday, it looks absolutely pan flat. There's barely a breeze. And it's the same for Saturday. And it's a little bit peakier on Sunday, but it's nothing at all to worry about. I'm seeing no rain, no electrical activity. And I'm seeing warm temperatures, a lot warmer than last year. So Saturday, it looks like we're up to 29 Celsius, and Sunday 28. That's a lot warmer than last year. All I think is that clearly they will get this course as crispy as they want it to be. There's absolutely no natural way that that isn't going to happen. So what you see from a course moisture perspective is what they've decided to put on that course.
With the
warm conditions and the lack of wind, I'm thinking they're going to get these greens lovely and perfectly releasing. My guess would be we've had 10s and 11, I reckon about 13 under.
Yes. Yeah.
I reckon that's the 12 to 13 is the magic number for me.
Mm. Yeah.
12, 13 under.
Yeah. It's been consistently around that kind of 10 to 12 bracket, hasn't it, for a few years now. So they can manage it to that level, and I'm sure that's where the target will be.
Barry, as a golfing purist, I would assume you are absolutely licking your chops this week, just looking at this forecast and knowing that the organisers have full control of this.
It's pretty exciting. Yeah, I was watching the AMA on Sunday, and just seeing a small bit of a brown tinge get to the grass already. It's just they have the best possible control to set the course up however they want. So whatever we see is whatever way the Augusta committee decides this week. So,
yep.
We all know what we want. That kind of, you know, a bit of pop when the balls hit the green. So it even more identifies who is hitting the approach shots the right way to control it. I think it might allow, if the course being a little bit, if it does play that little bit firmer, it might allow a bit more separation. So we could get 1, 2, or 3 guys kind of getting away from the field a little bit. It'd be interesting to watch that. As it doesn't always happen at Augusta where you get that separation. So that's one thing I'll be curious to watch, and hoping one of my guys does go in that breakaway pack if that does happen. So, yeah, it's. I think this is probably the first year in, I don't know how long, that we're not concerned or worried about the weather going in and praying for a little help right now. It's yeah, it's pretty much perfect.
Hmm. Should be good.
I've gone to on the predictor model, listeners. We have so just go to the homepage, Golf Betting System. It's all free. We have a predictor model on there. There's a new style. There's an old style. I've just gone and maximised firm positive golf course players over the last 5 years. Unfortunately, Scotty Scheffler is number one. But here's some names just throw in there. Tommy Fleetwood at two. Rory McIlroy at three. Well, there's two of the three last Masters winners. Victor Hovland is at four. Xander is T5 with Maverick McNealy, of all people, and John Rahm. Colin Morikawa is T8 with Sam Burns, and Matt Fitzpatrick sneaks into the top 10 firm golf courses. His Valspar win the other week was on a very crispy golf course, if you remember correctly.
Yeah, I kind of get that because the nature of his ball flight, probably if he's hitting fairways when it's firm, he's getting extra length out of that those drives as well. So would make a level of sense.
Right, I think we should go into selections because it's going to be a busy old show this. So I've looked at various different metrics. I've included a lot of work that Paul mentions in the previous research podcast around players that have already won this year, players that have contended in majors last year. Also, I've looked at various different skill sets, what I'm looking for a Masters typical winner. And I'll just throw some out there. Birdie or better, par four birdie or better, going for the green, distance to apex in terms of the height of shots and the power that they have, driving distance, all drives, and on a golf course which is really, really out there as an outlier in terms of around the green game and the importance of around the green, I'm looking for players who in the recent past, i.e. my tracker, it's 8 weeks, have got excellent around the green game. Now, I mentioned the data golf rankings, the 1-3. Current data golf rankings as we sit here. Scotty Scheffler 1, John Rahm 2, Rory McIlroy 3. I can't back Scheffler. I don't back defending champions because none of them have won since Woods in 2002.
Yeah.
And very few of them even place each way. I believe Scheffler did last year, but then that's Scotty Scheffler, and I think he was 4-1. Or maybe even shorter. Was he like threes?
Yeah.
I've gone for John Rahm. I've gone for John Rahm. Now, I can hear a lot of people out there literally, he's a LIV golfer. I'm beyond that these days. I believe I had Brooks Koepka at the PGA a few years ago, and had he joined LIV at that stage? I can't remember, but that the split had happened. I'm not into the politics of golf, but just John Rahm. If you're just looking at this from a strokes game perspective, if you're looking at this from a data golf rankings perspective, and just the fact that he was in the mix at a few majors last year, all of his game stats are absolutely perfect. Not only the thing I love about John Rahm is off the tee, not only is he super long, but he's super straight. And that unlocks a lot of scoring opportunities at Augusta because if you can clear a lot of the bunker trouble, which is positioned between about 300 and 315 yards. If you can clear those bunkers, you're into pretty wide fairways that you can then attack from with a wedge or a medium iron on a lot of these holes. So, John Rahm, for me, if you were looking for the trend number one this year, he is that man. I've gone 4 points, win only. I got an enhanced win only price with Bet365, 23-2 on John Rahm, picking up his second Augusta jacket and his third major. I just like it also with Rahm. There's this, he just seems to have that pugnaciousness back. He's got that Rambo vibe about him. He's got a fight now with the DP World Tour. And he's got something to prove. He wants to take out another major, I think. He's been off colour for a while, but this year he's back to his pugnacious best. And I like that in him. I like a John Rahm that's got something to prove. So 23-2, enhanced win only price with Bet365. I am on John Rahm at the top of the market. And, I mean, this preview went out at 10 a.m. UK time, Monday morning. He's been backed heavily in the markets. Very heavily.
Yeah, very popular.
What are your thoughts? So Barry, what are your thoughts on the top four in the market? So Scheffler, Rory, Rahm, and DeChambeau. I know they're not in price order, but...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts?
Scott, I don't think Scotty will win unless he's figured out what has been making him off colour the last while. I just see him kind of maybe connecting to the top, but just not getting there. Rory's the defending champion, so kind of the history of that is so strong. It's kind of hard to ignore. It's just difficult. It just seems like a very difficult psychological thing to do. That said, if anybody was to kind of bust that defending champion thing, Rory's that kind of superstar, that mercurial talent. So it wouldn't shock me. That's the thing. But for the purposes of a bet, no, I haven't backed him. Rahm is the one I'm most afraid of out of the four. I haven't backed him. It was because I had such a fancy on a couple of guys just a little bit lower down. If I started adding in Rahm, then yeah, it became more irresponsible than I usually am in my betting. So he's the one I'm most afraid of. And Bryson, I don't know. I think the Masters committee will just do everything possible to stop Bryson winning. I don't know. I don't think, yeah, it doesn't feel like this is his year, but that's just for me. And I'm wrong 9 times out of 10, so.
One of the trends you mentioned, Paul, on the last research podcast was the fact that recently, or just historically here, players that win in the year prior to the Masters have won a lot of these green jackets, yeah.
Mm.
And if I'm right, you brought it down to a list. If you laid that down, it was Bryson, Reed, Gotterup, and Casey Jarvis had multiple wins in 2026. Yep. It'd be good if I could get the year right, wouldn't it? As you know, I am getting more senile. And then single wins in Cam Young, Colin Morikawa, who we know has got back issues, John Rahm. So that's great for Rahm because he won a LIV golf event to break quite a long period of non-wins for Rahm. Then we also got Justin Rose. And is it Matt Fitzpatrick as well?
Yep.
Yeah. Have I missed one?
In this field? No, I don't think so.
I think those are the winners. This was from my post-it note from the research show.
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to dig out the analysis while you're talking. But
Well, let me take you... Where I'm heading with this is that we've had this discussion for year after year after year, and when we sit down on the Tuesday afterwards...
Mm.
We all sit there and we go, do you know what? It was the player with the best form heading in that actually took the green jacket home. It was that obvious. Now, Bryson has won his last two events. I think he was third in the one previous to that as well. I know there's this idea that he cannot play Augusta National, and as Barry alluded to there, I'm not 100% certain that that Mr. Ridley and the committee want him to win around Augusta. But you just get the feeling with him that he's starting to work it out, because it wasn't as if he hasn't been a feature in the last two. I'm not sure the firm conditions suit him, although he did win a US Open at Pinehurst, which was excruciatingly firm and fast. So, best form heading in. Two top six finishes here, or two top seven finishes in his last attempts. He is drifting he's drifting on the markets, but I actually have backed him. I backed him at 11-1 with William Hill, 4 points win only, Bryson DeChambeau. So I've taken two of the top four in the betting, Bryson, and I've taken John Rahm. His last win, by the way, he was third at LIV Golf Adelaide. He was first in Singapore. He was first in South Africa. I think there was an 18th place finish in there somewhere. No, there wasn't. It was third, first and first. That last win in South Africa, I know the golf course was sopping wet. I know Kikuyu grass and all of this stuff. But it did feature bent grass greens as well. So those LIV golfers did actually play a golf tournament on bent grass greens 3 weeks ago. No one on the PGA Tour has done that, because everything has been Bermuda and Bermuda overseed. So for me, it's 4 points win on DeChambeau, 11-1, and it's 4 points win only on John Rahm at 23-2.
Do you have any concerns? Do you have any concerns that Rahm and DeChambeau haven't played in a couple of weeks, in 3 weeks?
Yes, but that downs Xander Schauffele as well.
Okay, we're not playing tit for tat here. Come on. But okay, fine. Well, that sucks. So I better ask Betfair for a refund on my bets on a bet on them.
But yes, there is this great trend that you highlighted. Players that have won this recently, and a lot of them have all had a maximum of playing the week before, the week prior to that, so 2 weeks. A lot of that was the fact that the world match play was always in there. And we did say that The concern I've got, I wouldn't have a concern with Xander on that basis, to be fair. I haven't got amazing concerns with Rahm or DeChambeau, because I wouldn't have put them up. The one I have got a major concern about on that basis is the fact that Cam Young has not played since the Players. He clearly won that tournament, but he's breaking a lot of trends if he just comes and takes this one out. Because he hasn't played competitively for about a month. So you're going to get a lot of Fitzpatrick backers. I don't think that, to me, wouldn't put me off backing Fitzpatrick. For me, Fitzpatrick just isn't long enough and hasn't got the attributes to win at Augusta. That's what puts me off Fitzpatrick. It isn't this narrative around the timings of the tournaments, so to speak. But anyway, I've given away the fact that you've backed Xander. So, do you want to take the listeners through your Xander angle, please?
Mostly to do with seeing him the last while put together some nice finishes, like the third and the fourth. He's been off the last couple of weeks, but it was seeing him put in these serious Sunday charges and post his name up there, like the non-competitive top five, just hinting at a lot of underlying good form. Wondering why he wasn't winning, I looked into his scoring average for the last while, and Saturdays have been an issue, so I'm not sure if he's gone out and having a couple of Pinot Noirs too many on Friday nights or what, but the guy's... he's a phenomenal golfer, and he'll figure that out. So I just liked a lot of the underlying what was there, and couldn't ignore, and went for it. So I mean, just to back it up, what, you know, his the stats, he is 8th in tee to green in your tracker, which is nice, and he is 6th in overall. So just underlying very good stuff there, and it was nice to kind of see the stats back up what my eyes were kind of catching on the leaderboards.
I'm going to ask this to both of you. I'll have a view on it as well, because I can hear a lot of people, they want views on players, but they also probably want views on who not to back. So out of Scheffler, Rahm, McIlroy, DeChambeau, Xander and Ludwig, clearly you've laid your cards on the table there with one, Barry. I've laid my cards on the table with two because I've backed them. Who would be your fade of the top six in the betting? Now, for me, my fade would be Rory McIlroy. That's my view. I would fade McIlroy of those six. What about you, Paul? Who would you fade of the top six?
Well, so
Oberg, Schauffele, DeChambeau, McIlroy, Rahm and Scheffler.
Yeah, I've backed one, which I'll go through in a second. I've got no time for Scheffler or McIlroy, and I guess when
that's
you
a
go
bit
into
cool. These, he's fading too. Nice.
Yeah,
I like it.
I guess when you go into these, the analysis or the kind of thought process for this, you have a feeling one way or another, or a fear that someone, you know, could come through and win. And I just don't have that feeling with Rory. I think the back issues and the preparation hasn't been great with Scotty. The preparation hasn't been great with the baby coming and all of that malarkey. And his game has also been on a negative trend since that early season win. His approach play has been poor. He's been losing strokes with his approach play, which is really un-Scotty-like. And just the eye test of having seen him play and some of the kind of mannerisms and the you know, the disgust with some of the shots that he's been playing, there's a lot that he needs or will have needed to iron out prior to this week. And I'm not sure the you know, the baby scenario, whilst you're going to have this kind of nappy factor angle that people will be kind of clinging onto, I guess, whether that's going to be as relevant, given that I think he needed time to sort stuff out in his game, and that hasn't been afforded to him, I shouldn't have thought. He's the best player on the planet, and of course he could go and win that, but yeah, neither of them carried any interest for me. Xander, if he'd have been a little bit longer, I could have gone from an each way perspective, but he's been battered in the market. Ludwig, I just, you know, last week it wasn't quite an open goal, but he was the player that I thought was going to come through and beat Bob. And in the end, both of them kind of dropped away. My biggest fear is John Rahm, but the one I've backed is Bryson DeChambeau. And I won't just repeat what you've said, because the rationale for you backing Bryson is almost identical to me. You know, you've got players, you've got this language, this narrative that we often come back to, as you alluded to, at the kind of the post-mortem of these events, where you're talking about the best player in the world for that year to date, and he's one of the very few players who's won multiple tournaments. You've got this trade-off between live form and PGA Tour form, even against DP World Tour form as well, which, you know, it's difficult to gauge between the three. But I suspect the addition of adding OWGR points to Live Golf from this season will help focus and almost normalise some of those performances a little bit. And I just can't ignore what he's done. As you said, a couple of wins his last two starts. Don't forget, one of those wins, he beat John Rahm in a playoff. And
yeah,
you know, if you're
that was looking, the last one, yeah.
If you're looking at it from a, you know, from a, you know, from a kind of horse racing analogy, where you've got a player who's got, you know, has got the form line over another, then that would be the one. He's stared him in the eyes and beaten him in the very recent past. I can see them both going toe to toe. I can see them both being right up there in the end, and I can wholly see the strategy that you've employed by going with both of them from a win-only perspective on the basis that they are the two most likely winners. But yeah, I've just picked the one. I may relent and just put a saver on Rahm just in case, because I'd like to have some interest at the back end of it, but I could see them.
Oh, there's nothing pushing each other. I've done this for many, many years, where you're sitting there on Sunday and you've literally got you're begging Patrick Cantlay to shoot a 62 and get a share of the each way places at like 20-1. It's like, oh my, there's nothing worse. You need a runner on a Sunday at Augusta, don't you? A live chance, because there's a proper sweat. Mm. I mean, Rory's was the ultimate of all time last year.
Yeah. The only thing
I could barely watch it.
Well, no, look, that was box office in the extreme, and I think I talked about it after the event last time. But there were people messaging me during that Sunday evening who I didn't even know watched golf, and they're like, "My God, I'm watching this! It's just absolutely incredible." Mm. And it was, and from a spectacle perspective, if we see anything like that this week, then I can't wait, and I would very much rather be on board the player that's involved in that. So I for me, Bryson's the right winner. I think with the way the course is going to set up this year, that length will help in that the closer you are to the greens, the more the shorter the club that you're going to be able to pitch into these greens. And I think that's going to help in terms of some control around the pins. And there's no one else out there who I think will aggressively take on the course as much as Bryson. And if he can pull those shots off and leaving himself just wedges into some of these greens, and he'll be scoring.
And his wedge play has hopefully improved, because that was the downfall last year, wasn't it, with DeChambeau? It was his wedge play. And he has, and it's been across all of his social, he's been testing and working for the last month on getting a set of wedges that he's absolutely happy with heading to Augusta National. Because he knows.
Yeah. Absolutely. And if you look at, you get some strokes gained data out of Data Golf now for the live performances. And if you look at the strokes gained approach numbers recently, they have been up and down. But in Adelaide and also in Singapore, he was really quite positive with the strokes gained approach performances. So there's something bubbling there. And as you say, it feels in general, he's a step above where he was last year. And don't forget, he finished fifth last year. He was out in that final group where he was trying to get some communication out of Rory and failing dismally.
But you listen to a lot of views and people, oh, he can't get around Augusta. He just can't play around. He's got no chance. You think, he was in the final. Oh, yeah, but he only did that because he only had one good round. It's like, okay. Right, Barry, I'm coming to you. So who of that big six would you fade? And then take us on to your next selection, please.
I'd fade Scotty. I can't say I can't fade Rory because, you know, I'm Irish. So, but I kind of would tend to agree with Paul on that in general. He's got that. He's that same problem that you spoke about for Cam Young, nearly a month off, and that was following a withdrawal and a 46th. Before that, things were good. So, yeah, so
you know what I could see Scotty doing? I could see Scotty finding his game this week and then taking out the RBC at about 4-1 next week.
Yeah,
can see it a mile off.
That's fine. Just, I don't want Scotty to win because I haven't backed him. So I have actually backed two of those top six. So I've had Oberg in my head for this for quite a few weeks now. Couple of Sunday issues where it just hasn't converted and turned those into wins. But I don't mind that. I'd rather somebody be there and fail at winning on a Sunday than not be there. He's had the chances, so now it's figure that out mentally. And it's not like he hasn't won before. Probably hasn't won as much as we would have expected by this at this stage. He's just got the two wins, but he's still very young. And two goes around here, he's finished second and seventh, and his last three outings have been third, fifth, and fifth. So I kind of like where he's at, and I have put a few euros on him. So,
Ludwig Oberg for you. Now, I think this is where it starts to get interesting as well. So we've gone through the top six in the market and we've got various fancies there. Let's just pray that Rory doesn't win and that Scotty doesn't win for the sake of the podcast. Now, Paul pulled together a really interesting stat for me and for Barry. We have a majors form analysis on the website. And how many years does that go back, Paul?
This lot, we tend to have a roll in 4 to 5 years. It depends where we are during the season. But we've looked at it back historically. So if you go back through the historic stats pages, you'll find it going back to, I don't know, 2010, 2012, that kind of number. But yes, just for the in the interest of keeping it relatively concise, it's the last few years.
So players that perform best at majors, you know, the ultimate Brooks Koepka kind of model that when he was in his pomp and his prime, Koepka used to just, I'm not interested in PGA Tour events. I want to take out the big beasts. And he did at regular times. Now, what Paul's pulled together for the two of us was that I said to him, Paul, who can we do this for the last 2 years? The last eight majors, who are the guys that are performing best? I'll go through those numbers. I'll go through the top 10. Justin Rose is at 10, 70.96. It's all based on scoring average. He's had three top sixes, including second at the Open in 24, second at the Masters last year. Russell Henley at 9, 70.93. He's had four top 10s, and this is so Russell Henley. He's had one top 5 at the Open Championship in 24. So if you were backing him, you're just throwing your money away, but he's still in the top 10. Robert McIntyre is at 8, 70.92, 8th at the PGA in 24, 2nd at the US Open last year, 7th at the Open Championship last year. Corey Connors is at 7, 70.87. He's had an 8th, a 9th and a 10th over the last 8 majors. Isn't that just so, Corey Connors? 6, Rory McIlroy, 70.57. 5 is Chris Gotterup, 70.5. He's only played in a couple of majors, but he was 3rd at the Open last year. You get the feeling with Chris Gotterup, and I did mention him at the very top of the pod, he is the kind of player that I think is going to be hanging around at the top of leaderboards for quite a while, and also at majors. 4, Alex Noren, 70.43. He's just Mr. Consistent. He's had a 12th, a 13th, and a 17th. And then we've got the top three. Bryson is at 3, 69.96. He's had a 6th at the Masters in 24, a 2nd at the PGA in 24, a 1st at the USO in 24, and then last year, 5th at the Masters, 2nd at the PGA, 10th at the Open. That's a lot of action. 2, Xander. Barry's cheering this. 69.69. Of course, he won two majors in 2024. And number one, it won't shock anybody. And he's 69.47. It is Scotty Scheffler. So I just took that on board. I thought, who recently, if I'm looking for a player deeper down the market, what boxes are we ticking? Players with recent major experience, especially last year, Paul, that's one that you often highlight, or always highlight. A player that's long enough, got a big, high ball flight, or one that's at least big enough, playing well on par fours, great around the green game at the moment. I have plunged on the group above Oberg. We've got Fitzpatrick, Cam Young, Tommy Fleetwood, Hideki Matsuyama, Robert McIntyre, Justin Rose. I have backed Robert McIntyre this week. I managed to get him on first thing on Monday at 28-1 with Betfred, eight places each way, which is their default market. Robert McIntyre, the Scot. By the way, on Betfred, just to highlight it, they've also got 10 places and 12 place markets available with Betfred. And they had some cracking prices
on first show. 12th and 23rd here across two of his three Augusta appearances. The other thing with Robert is he's absolutely open about this. This for him, and I remember Matt Fitzpatrick a few years ago saying that he absolutely idolised, he loved Harbour Town, and then he goes and wins the RBC. Robert McIntyre is absolutely clear as much, clear that this is his favourite golf course. He loves it here. So, Robert McIntyre for me, 2 points each way, 28 to 1 with Betfred, 8 places each way on the Scott. Now, I've no idea where you're coming in, Paul, or you, Barry. So, what prices are you tipping up next?
I've got one at 35, and then they're out towards three figures and beyond from that.
Barry?
Yeah, I have an existing bet from a few weeks ago on Koepka.
Mm-hmm.
So, whether I love it or not, I'm with it's there. I'm with it. I think the rationale was like he has a bee in his bonnet as well about to prove to others or to himself or for whatever reason that he's back and he's back on the tour now. So whether he wants to substantiate that a bit by kind of making a statement, the long game's in great shape. At least the approach game is. Driver needs to be tidied up a bit. There's a bit of space off the tee here. And maybe having a tree-lined course kind of frames the picture of the hole a bit better and might make it easier to get the picture of the shot and then execute. So you don't always go to Augusta and find it, but I'm reaching for something there that could help. And, he was not shy of winning majors when he was in that kind of vein of or that stage of his career. So maybe he can have his rebirth kind of like Rory did after his long absence. So sitting on that one for a few weeks and, still happy with it.
Because I had a sniff of it as well. What price did we get? Was it 45s?
We got 45s, yeah. So
eight places, wasn't it?
Are we better off or worse off now?
Well, I'd rather have him in my back pocket, to be honest. No, you never can tell with Brooks, and he is a big game hunter.
I think we've beaten the market in terms of what we could get right now for a price, so that's good.
Yeah. I'm not seeing him any bigger. And at the moment on 365, he's 40 to 1, 8 places each way on their general market. So you're on Koepka. What about you, Paul?
What about Patrick Reed, who we've talked about a lot on this podcast for the Masters over the last few years, because I've backed him a lot. He won in 2018, and I was on board that week. And he, for me, has the ability to win another green jacket. It's that kind of event that does produce multiple winners, as we know. So seeing him win again wouldn't be out of the equation, I don't think. He's twice a winner in 2026, which I like. Both of them on the DP World Tour. That's where he resides nowadays, having left LIV. Won the Dubai Desert Classic. Good links to Augusta from Dubai Desert Classic winners over the years. Think Danny Willett, Sergio. He won in Qatar as well. Lost a playoff in Bahrain and could have effectively won three consecutive DP World Tour events this year. I mean, it isn't the PGA Tour, so there's a level below, but you can only beat what's put in front of you, and he was really impressive during that stretch of golf, hitting loads of greens, scrambling well. In Joburg, on his last start, he tied 10th. He hit 90%. Scrambling stat for the week, which is huge. If you're scrambling at 90% around Augusta, you're going to go very, very close, I think. Since that win in 2018, he's finished 10th, 8th, 4th, and then 3rd last year, with a couple of less impressive finishes. He can play Augusta National firm and fast. Augusta National is right up his alley, I think. And for me, of those kind of next tier players that are each way shots, 35 to 1 with 8 places out there at the moment with 365 and Betfred, both offering the same option. I think that's a great price for an each way shot for me for Patrick Reed.
I urge listeners, look at Paul's strokes gained analysis for Augusta. You'll find Scotty Scheffler at the top. Patrick Reed, over the last 5 years, is number four in that analysis. 1.91 strokes per round gained around Augusta. Only Morikawa, Barry's selection, Ludvig Åberg, and Scotty Scheffler have a better record around Augusta over the last 5 years.
He can play it.
He can play. Also, the point I think was made last week in the research podcast is very valid with Reed. I haven't got a penny on him, by the way, but if he wants to make something like a President's Cup, the only chance he's got to make a big noise is in the four majors this year. Which is how Koepka got into one of the teams when he joined LIV, because he won the PGA. So, you know, if he's got any ambitions of ruffling some feathers and getting into the President's Cup team this year, he's got to do it in majors, Patrick Reed.
Yeah, well, I think he's got a lot of ambitions full stop, hasn't he? He wants to get back onto the PGA Tour. He's almost guaranteed that through his DP World Tour performance so far this year. I'm sure he's got another Ryder Cup in him, and we know what a fit he is for that.
Also, order of merit on DP World Tour, of course. The points from this are going towards that, and if Rory's struggling with the green jacket on his shoulders, he could be absolutely just raking in a huge amount of points for the DP World Tour race to Dubai.
Yeah, great point.
A player who statistically I just could not get away from this week. Second for birdie or better, ninth for par four birdie or better, 18th for going for the green so far on the PGA Tour in 26. Distance to apex, number eight. Driving distance, all drives, 14th. Around the green across my eight-week tracker, he's in the top 20. He's data golf number 15, which surprised me, I have to say. He hasn't been a major contender, that has to be said, but he has got a top five at the US Open when Wyndham Clark won in Los Angeles a few years ago. Plays classical courses well enough. He has definitely taken a step forward this year with his all-round game and the way that he's actually contending in big tournaments. Second at the AT&T Pebble Beach signature event. 12th at the Arnold Palmer, another signature event. Third at the Houston Open, last time out when defending. So ticks the box, played 2 weeks ago. Min-Woo Lee. He was 14th here in 2022 on course debut, where he was joint top debutant with a guy by the name, I mean, I've forgotten this guy, Taylor Gooch. Don't know what's happened to him, but and also Harry Higgs. Wow. But yeah, he finished 22nd also in 2024. I went 1.5 points each way, 35-1 with Betfred, 8 places each way on Min-Woo Lee. I've got one left at 70-1. So Barry, is there anyone in this bigger kind of price point area that you have hooked onto this week?
I have. Gone for Jake Knapp. Not just in the outright market. I think guy's playing some phenomenal golf. He's got length for days, which will really help. He's an excellent putter. Doesn't necessarily separate itself at Augusta, but I think there's it's too much to like about his game. And he's had one bit of experience here a couple of years ago. Arguably a much more rounded golfer now, and has been just been beating up golf courses without getting a win so far this year. So he's in the squad.
Yeah, I was on him a few weeks ago in Texas, and he closed with some ridiculously good round to grab some of the each way places. But yeah, good player, Jake Knapp.
you get the feeling at some point he's going to pop in a major or two. And Augusta seems like the right kind of course for him. He's certainly got the pop, hasn't he? And his putting at the moment across my strokes gained 8-week trackers. He is number one in this field for putting. Never a bad thing. Paul, what about you?
Yeah, I've got one other sub 101 shot, and that's Sungjae Im, who depends how you're playing, but 90-1 with 8 places with 365 is how I played it. If you look back last year, there were 3 players who placed in the kind of 80-125 bracket who got into the each way players, each way places last year. Rose, who was in the playoff, as we know, he was 100-1 Rose last year. Pre-event. That's mad price. Patrick Reed, who was 80-1, I backed him last year. He was third. He had his chances, but just couldn't quite do it on the Sunday. The other one was Sungjae Im, who finished in a tie for fifth. He was 125-1. The book is a little bit wiser this year, but he's still backable for me at 90s, mainly because he's got such a good record here. Second on debut back in 2020. That was the November Masters. 8th in 2022, 16th the year after, and then 5th last year as well. So 3 top 8 finishes over the years from his efforts here. And it's by far his best major, as you can imagine. Now, the thing with Sungjae is he had this wrist injury early in the year. So that kept him out of the tournaments for the first few weeks. Came back at Bay Hill, missed a cut at Sawgrass, but then was leading through 54 holes at the Valspar. Just fell away a little bit on the Sunday, but that was his first taste of competitive golf, contending golf again for some time. So that should have got the juices flowing a little bit again, I think, for Sungjae. And he's coming back into this now, hopefully much fitter. It appears that his wrist is in a much better place now and coming back to a course that he's performed well on, as I say, a number of times now. So I thought for an each-way chance that's verging on that kind of three-figure number, that Sungjae was worth a punt for me. I've got a couple around 150s, which we can go through a little later if you like.
Sungjae. Barry. Yeah, no, I've backed the Sungjae one as well. Just seemed like a very nice set of odds for a guy who's got that level of talent to happily pop up there and into the places.
Yeah, President's Cup year. He was the 54 hole leader at Valspar when Fitzpatrick won.
Yeah.
You do get these course specialists, don't you, that just pop up. I think that place he got last year was off something like 60 something at the Valero Texas Open. He wasn't in sterling form for that last year.
No, and I think if you draw the parallels between Rose, Reed and Sungjae last year, who were the 3 players who did place in that kind of price bracket, each of them have got fantastic Augusta records, haven't they? Rose, I think he'd had a couple of second place finishes prior to last year's effort. And Reed, as we know, had also won back in 2018. So it's one of those events where you can give a little bit more credence to prior performances over current form, and that works nicely for the Sungjae bet this week, I think.
My last bet, it's a guy that's, you've got to say, it's been a slow build. Big, big talent, big game. He was a member of the Ryder Cup team at Simeone for Team Europe. That particular year, he then went on to win the DP World Tour Championship at the Earth Course. I believe he finished second in South Africa and then went to Dubai and won the season finale on the Earth Course, which clearly was and still is his biggest win. I just think it's taken him time to... It's strokes gained mental with a lot of these players, and certainly the case with this individual. He's now into the top 25 on the data golf rankings, top 40 for the world golf rankings. This year, 4th in Dubai, never a bad correlating course, as Paul always had, had uh, highlights. Third at the Phoenix Open. Another great course when you look at players like Scheffler, John Rahm, Hideki. Sorry, Paul, to remind you about that one. Sixth at the Cognizant and second last time out at the Houston Open. His last major, he was 14th at the Open Championship at Royal Portrush. Now, I'd never have Royal Portrush and this player linked together, but it happened. That particular major performance was off the back of fourth at the Scottish Open the week before at the Renaissance. If you just look at him statistically, he ticks pretty much every ball striking box known to man for this that I would be looking for. The Danish sensation, one of the Højgaard twins. I've gone for the Nikolai version. Nikolai Højgaard, a point each way, 71, with Betfred, 8 places each way on Nikolai Højgaard. I am done. That's me. So, Paul, you've got a couple of longer triple digits here. And then we'll ask Barry if he's got any other outsiders. So, Paul, take us through your two, please.
Yeah, the other two, both 150. Both, I'm just looking through the betting board now. Both of them available right now with Betfred, 8 places, a fifth of the odd, 150-1. First one's Daniel Berger. He withdrew last week, having qualified for this through his world ranking position in that final cutoff. So he decided to take last week off. He was quietly fancied for last week. I know you put him up, I think, Steve, didn't you?
I put him up. Saved me a few points, didn't he?
But I think that's, you know, that's indicative of his chance last week. There was, you know, he was quite widely fancied before he decided to knock it on the head. So he's coming into this and effectively prices and also ran. And it just feels a bit dismissive to me, seeing as he came within a playoff of winning at Bay Hill recently. So the form coming in isn't bad. He was 10th here on debut back in 2016. That was the first of 4 career major top tens. Got some wider form in Georgia too. His best of 2nd at the RSM Classic the year before last. So that, you know, whatever correlation you'd give to that, but some form in the vicinity, I guess, at least. The icing on the cake, quite literally, is that it's his 33rd birthday today. Happy birthday, Daniel Berger. Perhaps he can celebrate in style by donning the green jacket on Sunday. Wouldn't that be nice at 150-1? So Berger's in. The other one is Ben Griffin. Now, we've seen debutants place over the years. And yes, we've got the Fuzzy Zeller factor going back to 79, I think it was. So in terms of him actually winning, that might be a bit of a stretch. But in terms of placing, I wouldn't be surprised. As you said right at the top of the pod, Steve, I wouldn't be surprised to see one or two, maybe three debutants in and around the each way or the extended each way paying places this week. So we shall see. But the one that caught my eye is Griffin. And, you know, I know this is a whole about debate about world rankings, OWGR against Data Golf and which one should be right. But what I tend to do at the start of my analysis each week is to append the current world ranking to a field to see if there are any outliers in terms of price. And for me, Griffin was the name that stuck out like a sore thumb. He was up to eighth at the end of last year in terms of his world ranking. That came off the back of 3 wins in the year. And of course, he made the Ryder Cup team as well. 16th now, but even so, 150-1, if you rank the players in terms of their world ranking, is way out there in terms of an outlier. So that piqued my interest. He lives in St. Simon's Island, so relative local. Vowed never to play Augusta until he'd qualified. He'd had chances. He knows some members who had offered to give him a tea time around Augusta. He said until he'd actually got qualification secured, he was never going to play it. He's done that now. He's played some practice here. Loves the course. Showed some improvement last time out in Houston as well. He'd had a bit of a rough start to this year, but 28th last time out after 3 missed cuts. He is that kind of player, I think, who could go on a sharp trajectory of form improvement. A classy sort in horse racing parlance, who could move forward this week. So had a go on Ben, had a go on Daniel Berger, and Sung J.M. as my three longer prices, as I say. But that's me.
Any more from you, Barry?
I've one more left, but it wasn't from me. So one of our listeners, Golf Gambler with an O, at Gambler Golf, was on to me in the messages about a long shot he's picked up. So this one works quite well. So best result in the PGA is he won the Houston Open. Also has a fourth. His last three results are 8th, 11th, and 8th. With strokes gained totals for those of plus 1.37, plus 0.41, and plus 1.87. Had a win in 2025, was T8 at Royal Melbourne, and his best major finish last year was T4 at the US Open. He's only had one Masters appearance, which was a missed cut. But things, you know, that's a nice set of stats there, right? So name is Carlos Ortiz.
Yeah, he came. He was very visual across my 8-week trackers, if you included LIV Golf players.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very visual, Carlos Ortiz.
So yeah, there was Ron Close did a put out a tweet about the just strokes gained tee to green in the four tournaments before the Masters win. Just in that ranking table, Ortiz is 13th in that table. And so I didn't go for the Paul Williams greedy get like the 250-1 eight places. I went for the 12 places. So took 125-1 12 places. Thanks to Gambler Golf for spending my money and donating to Betfair or to Bet365. I like
interesting. As Steve said, actually, he appeared in some of the analysis I did as well. And I'm trying to remember back after the US Open, but I think we discussed him in the pod following that and kind of earmarked him as someone who was worth keeping an eye on for future major championships on the back of that performance. So, yeah, stranger things have happened.
He's fifth in your tee to green ranking, Steve.
Oh, I know. Yeah, he's very, very visual. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, I could see Ortiz. I mean, it's not one that would jump readily to mind, so thanks to Golf Gambler for that one, but he makes a lot of sense. He's had an 8th in South Africa, 21st in Singapore, 6th in Hong Kong, 8th at the Aussie Open, and yeah, 4th at the US Open last year. What a huge price as well. Mm. As Paul mentioned, it does happen. You can get some big, big prices in that top eight. Interesting. Well, I think that's us. I hope your bets go well on this Masters 26 week, chaps.
Yeah, best luck, boys.
You too, boys. I think we named everybody, so we have to have the winner somewhere between our bets.
Let's hope so. Brilliant stuff. Don't forget the majors competition. First tee-off deadline on Thursday. Cash to be won. If you've got this far, can you throw us a 5-star like on Spotify? Of course, send us a 5-star review. And also like and subscribe on the YouTube channel. We hope your bets go well. We'll see you for the RBC Heritage Edition next week. Goodbye.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system, the golf betting system.